This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell.
Welcome, friends, to the Creativity, Spirituality, and Making a Buck podcast on the Be Here Now Network with David Nickturn. My name is Michael Kammers. I am David's student and co-producer of this podcast. And in these David's Views episodes, we have discussion on topics around mindfulness and Dharma. And we'd like to welcome you and welcome David.
That was tricky to say, David's Views episodes, right?
A lot of S's in there.
Yeah. We have something, don't we, in the recording business called a de-esser?
It's true.
Yeah, because S is a tricky sound. S. It creates a lot of vibration. So, you know, Michael and I are both musicians. Perhaps it's our main language. I've been thinking about this lately, Michael. That's, you know, you learn different languages like French and English and Japanese. But music's the same language the whole world over. You actually don't have to learn a new language to play music with a friend from Japan. And for example, I have played music in Japan with Japanese bluegrass musicians. And some of them know the words to the songs, and they even sing it with a southern accent, but they don't speak English at all. So even speech has a vibrational aspect to it that is general. And my guess, and then if you remember from the movie Close Encounters, they used a musical sequence to communicate across not just international, but interplanetary boundaries. Bah, bee, bee, boom, boom. Remember that? I hope we don't get copyright infringement for me singing that melody.
I think it's pretty brief. I haven't seen that one, I think, since the 80s when I was quite young. So I don't have a clear recollection of it. But as far as like my early training as a musician, there's some amazing monologues by Sun Ra in Space is the Place. Mm-hmm. And in one of them, he says that the entire universe is a song and we're all playing mm-hmm. our part. Your music, too, in this vast orchestry of the cosmos. Be still, my heart.
You know, I think that we meant to start with the first of the three R's, but I think in our usual sort of rambling manner, we've actually stumbled into the third of the three R's. And as we usually do, I think we should just go along with it. And the third one is resonance, because we seem to be talking about resonance now already. What do you think? Should we just go with that?
I think we are going with it.
Yeah. Can you rename it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. So, of course, now that we're intentionally talking about resonance, we'll probably accidentally talk about resilience. But that also, maybe that's even a better topic, which is just accident. Ooh. You know, we do everything on purpose. We think we're doing everything on purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have people like Sun Ra and great jazz musicians who worship the accident. They revere the accident. And even in music, some of the notes that are not the predictable notes, not the white keys on the piano, but the black keys on the piano, are called accidentals, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I haven't thought about that in so long.
Why are they called accidentals?
That's a great question. Yeah. Oh, my finger slipped.
I'm on the other keys now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the difference between doing something on purpose and being open to the kind of freshness of accidental possibilities is, from the point of view of meditation, I think is really an interesting topic, because there's so much precision in the Buddhist tradition. In any case, you're almost never just go telling someone, just go do whatever the hell you want. You know, it's interesting that if a teacher gave you that instruction, you'd go like, I don't know. Maybe I didn't hear him right or hear her right, you know. It's always pretty precise, even meditation instructions that are meant to open the gateway to a very spontaneous, fluid state of mind. The instructions are usually pretty well articulated for that. For example, Michael Kammers, we have an instruction called aimless wandering. Have you ever done aimless wandering?
You know, we talked about this in the container a while ago, and I've engaged in it a little bit, tiny bit. And like, yeah. I'll just be walking around and I'll think about it, and then I'll just go about. And when you drop the agenda, wow, the whole moment just kind of opens up as it is, you know, sort of like in our meditation instruction, when we say eyes open, it's like seeing without looking, which sounds like a koan to itself. But like, if you're just seeing and you're not like, I've got to get through A, B, and C on my laundry list, you're just seeing and being with things as they are a little more.
Seeing and being with things as they are. 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 Yeah, it's, you know, our dearly loved, wonderful friend and teacher, Ram Dass, in the last couple of years of the retreats that he sponsored in Maui that we would go to, would just say, I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. And he would have us all chant that. And there was no explanation or, you know, you're supposed to think this or think that. So when you say seeing and being, you could just do it, but it might raise the question, and those of us who are used to being a little more active with our identification process of what the heck's going on, go, who's loving awareness? And also, what is awareness? What's love? But he was not coming from that perspective anymore at that point. He was just saying, you know, somewhere in you, you just know, you can just say this and return to that seeing and being. Yeah. Now, what's interesting, when they say be here now, in the Tantra, you know, in Buddhist Tantra, there's very, very, again, precise instructions for being here now. For example, one of them is the use of what's called pure perception. We've talked about that, right? Pure perception.
A little bit. I think we've touched on it.
And that's the idea of just seeing without evaluating, hearing without analyzing, smelling without categorizing, feeling without manipulating. And that the realm of pure perception is actually accessed through certain meditation instructions. For example, if we give the instruction, just breathe out and dissolve into space, which was an instruction that Trungpa Rinpoche gave quite frequently to even beginning meditators. Yeah, feel the breath, but as it goes out, just dissolve out into space. Your sense of identity dissolves, your sense of effort, your sense of any particular practice dissolves and stays dissolved while you naturally inhale. And then you breathe out again with some intention and some focus, and then dissolves again into the space. Of course, then the more evolved version of that is just drop even that much effort and intention, and just you could say just you could say it's no instruction, but it's instruction for no instruction, which is more specific, which is don't and that could be said as don't meditate. Actually, that instruction, don't meditate. Also, don't wander, which is interesting because you think of meditating as the part of non-wandering, but it says don't wander. And then don't fabricate anything. Those three. So that would be like a little bit like sitting on a very electrified kind of, every time you wander, you think, I didn't do it right. Or every time that you fabricate something, you have a thought about lunch or something like that, or your relationship. And every time you try to meditate, you have violated those instructions. But the point of those instructions is just be, and also to rest in the pure experience of the sense perceptions as they arise without any kind of categorization. So that's hard. We're used to doing stuff, aren't we?
Certainly are. Yeah.
Yeah. We're not that used to not doing stuff.
We could say more than used to it, even like addicted to it, because we do it so much, it doesn't serve our well-being, but we keep doing it,
Well, and then Mike, some things you got to do, right? I mean, it's like like, for example, my car today, because it's so cold, that air pressure goes down in the tires. For those of you who are much more knowledgeable and skillful at these kind of things, you probably pump your tires up higher in the winter. I got to do that now after observing the effect, which is that my little light is going on saying, you've got low tire pressure. So I've got to make a point of going, I've got to remember this. I've got to go to the gas station in this freezing cold weather. Remember to bring quarters, put them into the air pressure machine, and take out my little gauge so that I don't overinflate them and I get the right, and I balance the tires. And that's something to do, isn't it? You can't just not do that.
Well, perhaps we could do those things from the state of being of being and seeing, right? So, like, is that why we practice, to bring this sense of, unconditioned awareness, however you want to say it, or loving awareness into our actions when we inevitably are brought into contact with the world?
Well, I think this is like, we've talked about the $64 question, which tells you how old I am, because that used to be the TV show was a $64 question. Then mysteriously, probably a decade later, it became the $64,000 question. And probably now it would just be Shark Tank or something like that.
The 64 NFT billion Bitcoin question.
Bitcoin question. So you're posing a question which I think is, people have contemplated. I personally, anyhow, have contemplated. Is it possible to be in a very open state of awareness and still have the kind of wherewithal, the intention, the calibration to go fill your tires properly? Now, my teacher, Trungpa Rinpoche, said definitely there's no enlightenment ward. There's no like hospital for people who are enlightened because they can't fill their tires or brush their teeth. However, in certain states, for example, what comes to mind is the oracle, the Nechung oracle, who serves the Dalai Lama and goes into trance states, which are very high vibrational states and extraterrestrial, so he can see details about stuff that's coming up. He told the Dalai Lama to leave Tibet in one encounter. Would I hire that oracle in full trance state to go out and get gas for my car because I had a 15-minute break and I needed it done?
What if the oracle told you that you need to go fill up your gas tank? I'm your oracle, David. You can pay me by the hour. Remember to get your quarters and fill up your tires a little more than you would because the weather is cold.
Well, and seriously, since it's such a big part of our Dharma Moon platform and view, is that you can have this kind of spacious mind, this kind of unfabricated awareness, and still at the same time function in everyday life. And we have it up on our website, and we're actually pitching that to people. What if we're not right? What if there are certain states of awareness in which your ability to function at that temporal level is severely hampered or irrelevant?
As a professional musician, I can say for certain that I've been in states of awareness like that. But
wait a minute. Go ahead and say more about that. Let's explore that.
Okay. Well, I mean, I was more speaking of like sort of states induced by plant allies, but
Okay. And playing music at the same time?
Oh yeah. I mean, as a younger man, I things have shifted dramatically for me as I've moved into middle age and developed a practice of endeavoring to inhabit my experience as it is. But what you were talking about made me think about prajna and upaya, right? And I mean, to bring some Dharma words.
Tell everybody what that means.
So prajna is, I'm going to use a technical definition. It's the Dharma. It's the mental factor that sees Dharmas in their true nature. It sees reality as it is.
That's badass, Michael.
I wish I could remember the name of the book that I read where I
got it. Even the fact that you read such a book is badass.
Wow. I mean, we have a mental factor in our psychology, according to the Abhidharma, or the Buddhist psychology, as we call it, that is part of our mental faculties. And through our meditation practice, through shamatha, the placement of attention and calm abiding, the vipassana clear seeing experience can arise from it. And from that, prajna, clear seeing, and skillful means. So perhaps if we can see clearly, we can act skillfully.
Oh. So these things thread together because you're talking about prajna and upaya, right? Which is skillful means. That one is dependent on the other is what you're saying. There's no upaya without prajna is what you're saying. You don't just get lucky, as we say, going out on your first date, you know?
Well, as a musician, I've heard that luck is the combination of, success is luck and preparedness, right? So that's another pair in a way. But yeah, it's in seeing clearly, we can act more skillfully, right? So if...
In seeing clearly, we can act more skillfully. Is there another component to acting skillfully? Seeing clearly is one. What would another component be? Is there one?
Well, I mean, the trifecta comes to mind that I was talking about with my our mutual friend Alex. See clearly, know what is, and act skillfully. What's that one?
Yeah. That's from a Sadhana Mahamudra. That's where that's from, by Trungpa Rinpoche. But what about the importance of feeling?
You know, I think when we say seeing, we're talking, this can bring us back to the pure perception, all of our sense perceptions. We're not, you know, like all of our sense perceptions and perhaps even our mental faculties, right? Because in Buddhism, when we talk about consciousness, there's a sixth mental consciousness, but that's getting a bit obtuse. But yeah, maybe seeing involves all of our sense perceptions and not just our eyes.
But feeling. Something else. And I'm not sure it's even addressed in Abhidharma.
Mm.
You know, what does it mean when you feel a resonance with somebody, something? And it would be prajna plus karuna, compassion.
Mm. Mm. There we
upaya,
go.
Skillful means. And compassion is the more elusive thing to describe because it really isn't based on a grid of calibratable things or something. I think of raw meat when I think of it. You know, like if you went to a butcher shop and you poked, you know, a piece of liver or something like that, you just put your finger in it. And then if you go another step and now that cow is alive and you're poking its liver and goes, you know, you could say there's perceptual apparatus and you'd be right. And how it's treated, how that information is treated. But there's some raw little uvula or you know, kind of a tender spot, G-spot of the heart. It's like your heart has a G-spot. And when you see something beautiful, you know, when you hear something beautiful, when you fall in love, and, you know, maybe some Buddhists would discount that. Oh, that's just delusion. But then why, if that's true, is love and devotion the keystone of Vajrayana practice? You ever think about that? I mean, it's so cool up to then. Okay, Hinayana practice, just get clarity about the mind and what's going on. Mahayana, see the habitual patterns that you have that make you resist recognizing interdependence with others. But in Vajrayana, you're supposed to fall in love with your teacher, actually. And it's also said to be unrequited love, which is, of course, the best kind of love. You know, you are supposed to be able to feel that longing that will never be fulfilled because it cracks you open. So it's an interesting sequence, as far as I'm concerned. And then what's beyond that, I would say, is a resonance field of non-differentiated source and object, which is infused with clarity of perception, recognition of interdependence, and feeling tone that is just, you know, openly distributed throughout that entire mandala, that entire system. And then what, you know, I don't know, maybe that was there all along. Really possible that was what the basis was the whole time.
Well, on that basis, perhaps we can all go and contemplate that wonderful exposition of the Dharma that you just laid out, David.
We.
Oh, to include oneself in the circle of compassion. Maybe, you know, we could think of mindfulness as heartfulness.
Well, you know, it's an interesting, just this could be the coda. We're both musicians, so we know what we mean by a coda, but a little addendum afterward in book writing. I have friends that work for Headspace. I just said, I don't know, you guys must have thought of this before, but there's like, you can't get much bigger than Headspace in terms of like introducing ideas about meditation and mindfulness. But I said, there's a sequel, like the B side of Headspace would just be simply Heart Space. And I don't have the access or opportunity to talk to the gentleman who would be able to create that reality out of headspace. But if anybody ever hears it, I just get my usual 85%. And that's the way that goes. On that note, we can close out.
Right, that 85% will be given to you with unrequited love.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, and a note to invoice my lawyer. yeah, that's good.
Well, I have no idea what we're going to call this episode, but yeah. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye, everybody.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.